Thank you for joining us today, listening to the Devil's Porridge Museum podcast. This instalment features Museum Access and Learning Officer Stephen Bogle in conversation with Museum Trustee Tony Turner as they discuss half-net fishing on the Solway.
I came up in 1960. My time as an electrical apprentice at Chapel Cross. I was earning about £16.60 a week. Now, the reason why I'm telling you that is because if you caught a salmon, then you get £5 a week. You could get £5 for the fish.
Sorry, Tony, is that how you got into, how you started off as a half-net fisher? Was it as a supplementary income to your apprentice wage?
Well, the reason why I did it, I followed my father actually met some, although he's an Englishman too, he came up and met some fellow Scotsmen at Chapel Cross, and they encouraged him to go half-netting. And he used to come home with bags of salmon and sea trout, and I was quite keen to follow him. Because I'd done rod fishing, but never actually done the netting. And that's the reason why I got involved in the salmon fishing. But you're right. When I was 21, I was married with two kids, and I just needed the money. So it's supplementing the wage was very important to me.
But it's also got a long-standing tradition in the local area, half netting. And the equipment, when you see the beams, are very impressive and very unusual. Could you maybe talk us through some of the kit that's involved in half netting and some of the terms that are used by the local fishermen that maybe our listeners aren't familiar with?
The framework for the net is about a 16-foot long beam, and the beam is a sort of horizontal member made of wood. Normally red pine. Red pine is better than the white pine. But it's a bit heavier. And at each end, and in the middle, there are legs, three legs. One, the middle leg is longer than the other one. But I liked them, and years ago, they was made out of a wood called greenheart, which is very strong and durable and flexible. Now we can't get greenheart, we use what we call kerowin. Now, I remember, 10, 20 years ago, people started to use aluminium, because obviously didn't need maintenance for the beams and for the actual beams, the framework for the catching the fish. But then it went on to fiberglass, which was lighter to carry. But I actually prefer the wood, because it gives you the extra buoyancy. It's heavier, but I think it's safer. And on that framework, the beam is a net tied onto it, something like a gold mouth. And the fisherman stands in the middle of the net and frame and facing the oncoming tide. It's an old method of catching fish in the Solway. Thought it was brought over years ago by the Vikings. And they reckon, I don't know if it's true or not, but the theory is that when the Vikings came over, to make sure they didn't go back home, they used the oars at the longboats for the beam, now whether it's true or not, because the oars were about 16 foot long and they just used them to catch the salmon.
Tony, having spoke to you many times in the museum, I know that you like a funny tale or two. I can imagine that there's been some funny incidents out on the water, either involving yourself or some of the other fishermen.
I think the funniest incident was watching my father-in-law, who also half-netted, and Gretna stepping into a really deep hole, which that morning hadn't been there, because, you know, the sand gets shifted about, thousands of tons of it get shifted about every tide. So he walked in what he thought was a flat piece of land, stepped into a great big hole. Now, my father-in-law was a smoker, and the trick was to always put your cigarettes in your hat.
Okay, yeah, to keep them out of the water, yeah.
Exactly, and I remember him stepping into the hole and disappearing, but he had the presence of mind to grab his hand, hold his cigarettes out of the water until he managed to split it out. But I tell you, it's a funny issue, but I tell you what, we've had it, that's a lot of number near scares. I mean, I've been caught and bowled along the water, and you actually miss your footing, and the force of the water is terrific. There's certain hard conditions, and I remember being bowling down the water once and just seeing the sky above, this sort sort of muddy brown water above my head, and I just couldn't get to my feet because every time I tried, I just got bowled over again. I must have been bowled down in the water for about, well, maybe a couple of hundred yards. But another 100 yards, there was a deep hole. I'd have been really in trouble if I'd got into that one. I can also remember a really serious incident once when there was a guy, a fellow fisherman. We were fishing a hem, which is where the hard shallow water runs over into a deep hole. It's a very good place to catch fishes. And a guy behind me, he got washed away. It wasn't very, you know, it was quite worrying because, in fact, a helicopter had to be called to try and save him. But he got out himself. Now, I remember, Steve, to give him extra buoyancy, I threw my half net to him because it's made of wood and it flowed.
Yep.
And that gave him the extra buoyancy he needed. But when we got back to the shore, I remember an old timer giving me a really good growl. He says, look, you never, ever do that. You never, ever, ever let go of your beam because you could have been in trouble yourself. And the last funny one I can really remember is me and my friend. We just finished the flood. We were going home, and we were in the getting dressed at the car park, and we saw a family of four walking on the sand. We knew they were sinking sand, they were quicksands. Stuff is very, very sticky. And this family of four were walking towards it with a big incoming tide. I remember we shouted and bawled at them to get off the shore, but instead of walking the way they came, which is where the sand was fairly firm, they decided to make straight for the shore, straight into the quicksands. Now, the four of them got stuck. Now, the wee lassie would be about 4 or 5 or something like that, and the wee boy would be about maybe 10. But the wee lassie, when she got stuck up to her knees in the mud, and she fell on her back, so it was really, really serious. But me and my friend went down and we got the whole family out. I remember helping this lady to pull her hands out of the mud because she'd gone down on all fours as well. And all she was worried was about her rings coming off in the sticky mud, you know?
Yeah.
And what we did was we pulled her out and we got back to the shore with the whole family all mud. We were all mud ourselves because we didn't have any protective gear then because we were going home. And we never get one word of thanks for all that. And this is where you have to use your beeping machine. This woman said, I never ever wanted to f***ing come to f***ing Scotland. I told you I didn't want to come to f***ing Scotland. Let's go home. That was it. So we never got a word of thanks. Just got this lady running around swearing at her husband. But it was very serious, you know, because probably about a quarter of an hour later, where they'd been, it would have been covered in water.
So, Tony, what do you think the future of half netting is in the local area? We've obviously had the exhibition up in the museum for a number of weeks now, and there's been a lot of chatter amongst the half netters that have been in and the other visitors about the future, about how it's almost a dying form of fishing in the Solway.
It's a dying art, absolutely. It's annoying art because it's a heritable method of fishing, the traditional method of fishing, given by Royal Charter hundreds of years ago by King James, and we've kept this tradition going. But because of legislation, conservation techniques, reduction in fishing times, catch and release, the salmon, there's no interest has been shown by young folk. I tell you what happened though, Steve. The salmon is an anseatro, a probably endangered species, but half netters are endangered too because I can't see it lasting much longer.
Hopefully, with the exhibition that the Ann and Half Net Association put together that we have on display at the moment in the museum, and continue to spread the word, or at least the heritage of it through things like our podcast today and other records that are being kept and programming, that there'll maybe be some resurgence, but as you say, it's kind of bleak days for half netting on the Solway.
I think one more generation and this important heritage, we're custodians of, we should be handing it on. There'll be no one to take that, to pick up that tradition and keep it going. Sad, very sad.
a funny, heartfelt, and perhaps sorrowful reflection on half-net fishing with Tony Turner was today's podcast. If you've enjoyed listening to the Devil's Porridge Museum podcast and you would like to find out more, please follow us on social media or check out our website to keep up to date with all our news and everything else that's going on at the museum.
I said, I bet that.